Where did the first cause come from? And if the first cause is God, and spoiler alert, I believe he is, then where did God come from? And is that even a valid question? We're going to look at that on this week's episode of the Faith by Reason podcast. Welcome to the podcast. As always, the website behind it all is faithbyreason.net. There you'll find the blog and our archives and categories and all of the information that's been provided the last several years. And you will also find this podcast as well as our social media. Please subscribe and comment. We'd love to hear that your comments, and we'd love to have you subscribe. So first of all, I want to start by apologizing for the audio quality, of the last podcast. We're having some technical difficulties with the microphone. It sounded a little hollow. So I apologize for that, and hopefully we've got that resolved. So where are we? We've started on the first series, mirroring the first series in the blog, by addressing the question of what's the point? What's the point of existence? What's the meaning of life? This is a question that we all ask without regard to religion or non-religion, whether you're a Christian, Jew, atheist, Muslim, Hindu, agnostic. We all want to know, what's the point? Why are we here? What is the point of existence? And that's what we're starting with. As I said in the initial podcast, I don't presume anything. I'm not even going to presume God. So we're not even starting, even though this is a Christian podcast, I'm not even going to start by presuming God. I'm going to start just with the basic question that we all ask, which is, what's the point? And that's how we started last week. We looked at the question of what's the point? What's the point of existence? And then we got to existence itself by looking at whether or not existence even exists. Yes, we again go down to the very, very basic levels on this. And we confirmed that existence does actually exist because we are able to think about it. I think, therefore I am. So we know that existence exists. And we looked at the cardinal rules that we all know that govern existence. And we all acknowledge these rules. The first rule is the rule of non-contradiction, which simply states that something can't be and not be. The Statue of Liberty can't be in New York and not in New York. But for our purposes, since we know that things are non-contradictory, then we know that existence can't exist and not exist. So since we know that existence exists, we can be pretty comfortable that the law of non-contradiction maintains that status quo, that existence does actually exist. Brilliant stuff. The second law, which we are going to dive into and is really going to shape a lot of the future podcasts, is the law of causality, which states that for every effect you see, there is a cause, and that cause is greater than and independent of the effect. And existence, our universe, is an effect. So whatever caused the universe is greater than the universe and outside of the universe. And since we also know from science, real science, our universe is not infinite. It's not been around for infinity. It's actually finite, which means it had a definitive beginning. We're going to get into some of the science behind how we know that the universe is finite in this podcast. But we know that. We know it's finite, which means there's no infinite regression of causality. There had to be a first cause for existence. There had to be a cause without any precedent causes or a causeless cause. So whatever that first cause is, it's really important in answering the question of what's the point, because whatever caused existence will probably be tied pretty closely to the answer to the question of what's the point of existence. So what can we know about the first cause and how the first cause caused our existence? Well, we have to look at the fundamental rules or that govern our existence. And really, it really gets down to two things when you think about it. There are only two ways that our existence, our universe, could have come into existence. It either came into existence naturally, meaning it conforms to what we know and understand about the laws of nature and physics, or it came into existence in a manner outside of what we know and understand about existence. So let's look at what we know about existence and see if the universe conforms to those natural laws or if it doesn't. And that's how we'll know whether it was naturally or supernaturally, whether the universe occurred naturally or outside of nature. So what is the universe made of? Well, there are really four things. that that consists of the universe. Everything we see, feel, and experience are one of four things. It's time, space, matter, and energy. And just a little warning, there will be a lot of science-y kind of stuff in this podcast, and I'm going to keep it as simple as possible, keep it in layman's terms, because this is not a science podcast, so I don't want to bog things down too much. So I will keep it simple when I explain some of these rules. So for those of you who are not science geeks like me, it'll be palatable for you. For those of you who are science geeks, don't take me to task because I'm being a little simplistic. Don't write me and say, oh, well, you didn't mention nuclear decay or thermodynamics within a closed system. I'm not going to do that because that's not what this podcast is all about. So again, everything in existence is time, space, matter, and energy. What are the rules that govern those things? Well, the rules that govern matter and energy, that's what we're going to start with, are called the laws of thermodynamics. I know, really crazy science-y sounding words, but I'm going to explain them. There are three laws of thermodynamics, and really, we're only going to deal with the first two, because the third one doesn't really matter for our purposes. And what are they? The first law of thermodynamics states that matter and energy cannot be created or destroyed. So no matter how hard you try, you can't really destroy something, even when you think you can. Like, even if you burn something up, like take, for example, a log in your fireplace. Well, you put it in your fireplace, you set fire to it, and it burns away, and there's nothing left but a little bit of ash, and you think you've destroyed it. Well, actually, you haven't. All you've done is change its form. All the potential energy that was in that log was released in the form of ambient energy that heated your house, which was the whole purpose behind you putting the log in the fireplace in the first place. So that was all dissipated into the atmosphere. It didn't go away. It just became dissipated, which kind of gets to the second law of thermodynamics, which we'll get to in a moment. But all that heat still exists. It just dissipated. And what was not potential energy, which could not be burned, became the ash. So the log didn't go away. It just changed forms. And that's with anything. You can't destroy any matter. You can change its forms, but you cannot destroy it. It will always exist. And also, you can't create it. You can't bring something into existence that didn't exist. No matter what the faith preachers you see on TBN and some of these other crazy religious networks say, you cannot think really hard and wish something into existence. It doesn't happen. Everything that's in existence is already here. You can't make something appear out of nothing. Sorry, David Blaine, or any of you believers in magic, you can't bring something into existence out of nothing, and you can't really destroy anything completely. You can only change its atomic forms, but you can't make it go away. So what that means is that matter and energy are technically eternal. All right, let's stick a pin in that and go to the second law of thermodynamics. And the second law of thermodynamics is what's called the law of entropy, which essentially states that over time, things break down, things decay, things go from order to disorder. And from a technical standpoint, from a purely scientific and physics standpoint, what it means is that over time, things lose energy. The energy that it takes to create something or to make something or to put something in order will go from order to chaos over time. And there's a great example of order to chaos. You see it every day in your house. When you clean your house and you don't do anything to maintain it, over time, what's going to happen? Well, it's going to become more chaotic. The dishes that you cleaned are going to become dirty. The room that you clean is going to get messed up. That's just what happens, especially if you have kids or if you're a bachelor. You see it all the time, that everything goes from order to chaos. Why? Because it takes energy to make something orderly. But if you don't keep that energy going to maintain the order, then over time, things are going to break down. On a biological level, you can look at the milk in your refrigerator. It, over time, it's going to decay. It's going to break down and get spoiled and just break down. That's how things happen in nature. Oh, and we have erosion. Mountains are experience erosion from wind and water, and they wear down. So things are becoming more chaotic. Things are losing energy. Things are slowing down. You know that if you push a boulder down a hill, it's not going to roll forever. Eventually, it's going to lose energy and it's going to stop. There's no perpetual energy. Things things break down. That's basically what the second law of thermodynamics states, that over time things break down, they slow down, they decay, they go from order to chaos. And these laws are accepted by science. Everyone knows these laws. Chemistry obeys these laws, physics obeys these laws. In fact, there is only one area of quote-unquote science that ignores the laws of thermodynamics, even though they're well established, and that area of science or pseudoscience is what we call evolution. Evolution denies the first and second law of thermodynamics by stating that, first of all, matter and energy can come into existence out of nothing, i.e. the Big Bang Theory, and then it states that over time, matter and energy become more complex. That's the whole macroevolution theory, which states that over time we went from amino acid to protein to simple cell to fish to lizard to mammal to monkey to man, which is going up in the level of complexity over time, which again violates the established laws of physics. And that's one of the many, many, many reasons why evolution is such a complete farce and a ridiculous theory. But I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about that a few podcasts from now. But suffice it to say, it's a stupid, stupid theory. And it still stuns me that it's so widely accepted and believed by people today. And that people who believe it think that they're the intellectual superiors when they actually believe an idiotic fairy tale that's unscientific and unprovable. But as I said, I'm getting ahead of myself. So we have those two laws of thermodynamics that govern the matter and energy in existence. So what do we do with that? Well, we look at our current universe and see if it conforms to those two laws. So what would the universe look like if it came into existence naturally, if it was completely conformed to the first and second laws of thermodynamics? Well, if it conformed to the first law, which states that matter can't be created or destroyed, that matter is eternal, then that would mean that the universe would have to be infinitely old because there's matter in it, and since it can't be created or destroyed, it has to have been here forever, always. Okay. That's fine until we get to the second law of thermodynamics, which again states that over time things break down, they slow down, they decay, they become chaotic. Well, if the universe was infinitely old and we were experiencing the second law of thermodynamics, then that means that entropy would be complete. Over the infinite amount of time, things would have slowed down to absolute zero. Things would have cooled down to absolute zero. That means if the first and second law of thermodynamics were true in the creation of the universe, then everything would be completely cold, completely still, and broken down into nothing but the basic atoms. Everything would have completely slowed down and stopped. Well, here's the big, huge, gigantic problem with that. Things have not slowed down. Things are not completely cold, and things are not down to their basic atomic forms. The universe is hot. It's full of stars and galaxies that are emitting tons of heat. There's tons of motion. The Earth spins around the Sun, which spins around the Milky Way, which spins around the entire universe. So there's tons of motion, tons of heat. So we know that the universe could not be infinitely old. So that means, and that's why scientists have concluded that the universe had to have had a definitive beginning. It could not be infinitely old. So since the universe does not conform to those two natural laws, we only have one reasonable, logical conclusion. The universe could not, however the universe came into existence, it could not have come into existence naturally. The first cause could not have been natural. Therefore, the first cause caused the universe in a way that is not natural, or, dare I say, supernatural. All right, so that takes care of matter and energy. Let's look at time and space, and let's start with space. What is space? Space is essentially its locality. It's where we are. It's the answer to the question where. Just like causality is the answer to the question why, space is the answer to the question where. Where are you? I am in this one spot and sitting here in front of my computer. I am not anyplace else. I can only occupy one piece of space at a time. I can't be in two places at once, and I can't occupy the space that something else occupies. I'm sitting on a chair, but I can't be inside the chair at the same time. That's just against our rules of physics. Matter displaces itself. You can't have two things occupying the same space. Pretty simple. I think we all understand and accept that. And space also designates distance. I can't be in California and New York at the same time. If I want to visit someone who's in New York, I can't just be there. I have to travel there. I have to go through the space that's between where I am and New York City. And that takes a certain amount of time because I don't occupy the same space as New York. So there's distance. But what does that say about the first cause? Well, if the first cause created space, then the laws of causality tell us that the first cause is independent of and outside of space. That means locality and distance are meaningless to the first cause. That means that the first cause can be in two places at once, be at 100 million places at once, and distance doesn't matter. So it can be anywhere and everywhere. Or dare I say, the first cause is omnipresent. Interesting. All right, let's wrap it up by looking at time. What is time? Physical time is the way we measure the sequence of events. One thing happens, then the next thing happens, and the next thing happens. And we can go back and look at the last thing or the thing before that. And the way we define those things, that sequence, is past, present, and future. The past is what happened before. The present is what's happening. The present is what's happening right now. And the future is what will happen next. And we are confined, we human beings, we're confined to that past, present, and future. And we can only operate really in the present. And the present is the smallest measure of time. It's the smallest nanosecond that we are existing in, because the next nanosecond is a future and the one we just left is a past. We can't go to the past. We can think about it. We can remember it, but we can't go there. And we can't go to the future. We can predict it and we can think about the future, but it hasn't happened yet. So we are very, very narrowly confined into time. And so past, present, and future is how we are confined in time. And we can only experience the narrowest band, which is, again, the present. What does that say about the first cause? Well, if the first cause caused time, then it's independent of and outside of physical time. What does that mean? That means the first cause is not confined to past, present, and future. The first cause can go to the past. The first cause can see the future. We can't. And that's tough for us to wrap our minds around, because the future hasn't happened for us yet, so we can't see it. If the first cause is outside of physical time, then let's just say that the first cause experiences time differently than we do. It doesn't mean that there's no sequence of time for the first cause, but it does mean that however time is experienced, physical time, then the first cause experiences it differently. We know from Einstein that physical time affects and is affected by mass, acceleration, and gravity. Those are things that are very much within our existence, within our universe. But the first cause is outside of that. So the first cause is not affected by or is affecting time, the past, present, and future. So how does the first cause see time? Good question. And that's actually a question we're going to address in the next podcast. The reason I'm doing it that way is kind of based on a conversation, a pretty lively conversation that happened in the blog post that corresponds with this subject matter. And that blog post was called Where and When. And I got into a conversation with a couple of folks who were kind of debating me more or less about how the first cause sees time. And it got into some philosophical stuff about predetermination and self-determination and free will. And if the first cause can see the future and see it before it happens, then does that mean that we truly have free will? And does it mean we're predestined and we don't have any choice? Well, I'm not going to go too far into it, because I'm going to address it again in the next podcast. But I will just say that I don't think that the first cause being outside of time takes away our free will. I think that both those ideas can coexist pretty seamlessly. And again, we'll address that in the next podcast. So back to time and space. If the first cause is outside of time and space, what do we call that? We do have a word for it. It's called transcendence. What we mean by that is that the first cause transcends space and time. The first cause is supernatural, and the first cause is transcendent. So those are the two things that we can know about the first cause of existence based on the natural laws we know about existence. So again, this is tough to wrap our minds around. A lot of this stuff is very conceptual, and that's really the only way we can understand the first cause is conceptually, because this is some type of entity, some kind of thing that is outside of our physical universe, outside of space, outside of time, outside of everything we know and experience. But if you think about it, it kind of makes sense, because in the last podcast, we talked about how the meaning of life, the point of existence, whatever it is, it's something that's greater than us. It's something that's outside of us. So it would make sense that if the first cause is tied to the point, to the meaning of life, that it should be outside of our concept. And that's fine, but it also brings up a big problem. How do we understand something that is so far removed from who we are and from what we can see and experience? Well, the truth is, we can only understand the first cause based on human understanding. And that's what we'll be endeavoring to do in the next few podcasts, is go to the limits of what we can understand as human beings about the first cause and try to understand it based on that. Anything beyond our human understanding, we'll have to rely on another source of information. And again, getting ahead of myself, but what we will do in the next few podcasts is explore everything we can possibly know about the first cause based on nothing more than our human understanding with our minds and our brains. Well, before we get to that, as I said, there will be an interlude in the next podcast where we will talk about how the first cause sees time. I think it's important, and it will be something that we'll probably harken back to in future podcasts, and you also see throughout the blog post. So I think it's really important we understand how the first cause sees time. All right, and with that, I'm going to wrap up this podcast. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you coming and taking your time to explore this podcast and explore the blog. Please subscribe to the blog, subscribe to this podcast. Give me your comments. I'd love to hear them. Follow us on social media. And until next time, again, thanks for listening, and I will talk to you next week. All right.